The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know what time it is. It's time for Ask a Spaceman. I'm your host, Paul Sutter. You've got questions and I've got answers. You know how the show works, but let's feel it out one more time. You go online to Twitter, Facebook, use the hashtag Ask a Spaceman. Send some questions my way. You can send them that way. You can send them another way by just following me on Twitter or Facebook. I'm at Paul Matt Sutter, because that's my name. Another way is to visit the website, askaspaceman.com, or you can just email askaspaceman@gmail.com. So many ways to ask so many questions, and we have one simple goal with the show. Oh, visit the YouTube channel, youtube.com/c/PaulMattSutter. How could I forget? But we have one simple goal, complete knowledge of time and space, and on the road to complete knowledge of time and space is a very intriguing question I received via email from Tom. He asked, how would you describe the night sky to the blind? How would you describe astronomy to the blind? And I was struck by this question. It's an incredibly intriguing question to me. And so I wanted to answer it on this show. So first, why should we talk about this? Well, first, an apology. Two apologies. I apologize if there are better resources available, like online. I purposely didn't check, which is actually pretty par for the course for me. But in this, I know for sure that someone's written about this, someone's talked about this, someone's developed, lots of people have developed. And after the show is done, I'm going to dig up some references and I'm going to put them in the show notes. But I purposely didn't do it because I wanted to give my picture. I wanted to share my personal views of how I would describe this and let that kind of blend in with what other people have already done. I didn't want to just read someone else's website to you. The second apology is if in this episode I come out sounding patronizing. If this is your very first episode, then this is not anything special. That's pretty much how I sound to everybody all the time, is very condescending and patronizing. It's just me. I don't know. It's something about the tone of my voice, all right? I can't help it. So if I sound patronizing, that's totally normal. Go listen to some other episodes and it'll sound exactly the same. Now, why am I doing this question? One, the question was asked, and a question was asked about space and time, and I am duty bound to answer it. Second, science is for sharing, right? That's my motto. That's on my website. It's what I tried to live by. Science is for sharing. Scientists are obligated, I really feel very strongly about this, are obligated to translate their work into as many languages as possible. This show, Ask a Spaceman, which is supported by patreon.com/PM Sutter, your contributions, this show does exactly that. It already does a translation from the mathematics to English. Really bad, sloppy English, but English nonetheless. I try my best to get away from the mathematics. Not all the time, because sometimes certain concepts can only be described in the mathematics, but I do my best. Well, okay, maybe not best, like 90% of my best. Let's be honest. The language of science, the language of astronomy is mathematics. And I believe it is the duty, is the job of scientists and science communicators to translate what we know in science into as many different languages as possible. Astronomy is especially challenging in this regard. So there's a community for this. There's a community that doesn't get to appreciate astronomy the same way other people get to appreciate astronomy. And that's because astronomy is so intrinsically visible. It's all about the visible. Even when we use other wavelengths of light to study the universe, and I did a whole episode on that, about how do we see beyond the visible, what do we do with that stuff? We make a picture. We make it become visible. And the second thing we do, if we don't make a picture, we make a graph. We make a plot. We make a spectrum. We analyze so much of astronomy visually. And historically, it is such a visual-based science. And these kinds of questions are really important. If I'm to do my job as a scientist and as a science communicator, there is an audience there that would like to know what I'm talking about when I'm using all these visual metaphors, or when we talk about night sky events, things happening on the sky, things, what it's like to look through a telescope. They deserve to know. They just do. So I started, when I first started answering this question, typing up my notes, I looked around at various possible metaphors. So we have to use other senses other than sight to describe something that's intrinsically visible. And there's many options. I went with tactile. I decided I'm just going to stick with metaphors about things you can touch and feel and kind of describe or attempt to describe what I see in the night sky and what I see through a telescope through the sense of touch. I figured that tasting a supernova, while it sounds cool, it was a little bit harder to build interesting metaphors and useful metaphors out of that. So I left it out. So we're just going to touch. We're going to touch the sky. And the sky itself, we view, we sense as a vast upside down bowl, where the top of the bowl that's directly above us, is closer to us than the sides, even though it isn't. It seems like the sides, the horizon, the edge, the distant edges we can see out to the edges is much further away than what we can see on top. And also, by the way, another apology, if I end up like really sucking at this, of not doing a good job at all, I'm sorry. I'm doing my best, all right? But here we are. The sky, a vast upside-down bowl that seems shallow, that the top seems not as far away as the sides are. And during the daytime, of course, we have the blue sky. That blue sky feels, I don't know about you, but to me, it feels like a comforting lid. And it kind of sort of is. The atmosphere of the Earth is incredibly thin compared to the Earth itself or space. And it's a lid. It keeps our air pressure up. It keeps our oceans from boiling away in a vacuum immediately. Kind of useful. And that usefulness imparts a certain kind of comfort to it. In that sky, there are clouds drifting about, many different kinds. They all have a kind of cottony, very loose fabric-y kind of feel. Sometimes they're just like puffs of cotton and just seem kind of innocent. They're just kind of drifting by, not harming anyone. Sometimes if you take a piece of cotton, like a ball, and start stretching out, thinning it out, you can get these thin, wispy strands. And these are another kind of cloud that sit higher in the atmosphere, tend to be a little bit icier, and they feel colder. You know, you see them and it feels a little bit colder than the closer fluffy puffs of cotton clouds. And then, of course, there's some clouds where if you've taken the cotton ball and you've scrunched it down, squeezed it together and taken a whole bunch of its cotton ball friends and squeeze them all down together so they're almost hard and almost menacing. Those, of course, would be the storm clouds. The sun itself is a small disk embedded in this bowl that you can sense from anywhere. And even if you were to put a cloth on the inside of the bowl, like we're standing inside of a giant bowl, the sun is a disk embedded on that bowl. If you were to cover the entire bowl with fabric, you could still feel the sun. You can still sense the sun. Of course, you can feel, literally feel the sun. You can feel the infrared radiation hitting your skin and making you feel warm. The annoying thing about the sun is we know it's there. It's ever present. And you can feel the warmth anywhere on the inside of that bowl, but it's too hot to touch directly. You want to explore this source of light and warmth and energy, but you can't. If you actually put your hands on it, your finger on it, it would burn. It would burn your hand. It would burn your fingers. You can only sense it from far away, or comfortably sense it from far away. At dusk, when night comes, two things happen. One, it cools down, but we know this anyway, whether you can see it or not. The disk of the sun starts to leave one's edge of this vast upside-down bowl, and the Earth's shadow starts to rise on the opposite side. So this blue, calming sky starts to get replaced. So not only does the temperature drop, but the feeling of the sky starts to leave. That sense of security, like the sky as a security blanket, starts to go away. And it's replaced with something else that's really, really hard to describe. As the Earth's shadow rises, the daytime sky is replaced by the nighttime sky. This warm, blue, comforting sky is replaced by a certain kind of darkness that, when I'm in a cave or a very, very dark room and all the lights are out, or a very dark cave, or when I close my eyes, I feel like the darkness is like right up against me. Like I can feel or sense how the darkness is right there and surrounds me. But the darkness of the night sky is a little bit different. The darkness of the night sky is distant. It's almost alien. It's almost implacable. And there's associated with that, at least to me, a very deep sense of cool. Not cold, and not cool like Miles Davis cool, but like not quite cold, just slightly below average temperature, a sense of cool. And if you can imagine touching a material, an imaginary material that is impossibly smooth, that's so smooth you can't feel any texture to it at all. And at the same time, it has an incredible sense of depth. Looking at the night sky, and this is a very personal interpretation, almost like if you go up to the edge of a pond or a lake, a very deep body of water that's very still on the surface, no ripples, no waves, no noises. And if you're to just lightly rest your hand on the surface of that, where you can feel how smooth it is, but then you know that there's layers and layers underneath it. Looking at the night sky, I feel like you see something, but it's so smooth, so perfect. And there's this sense of depth, almost sense of impossible depth to it. Like there's not just one layer of material of this fabric of the night sky, but layers upon layers upon layers. The Greek cosmology, the Greco-Aristotelian model of the universe, viewed the universe as, of course, us at the center, because why not? And then a nested set of crystal spheres that glide effortlessly against each other and carry with them the planets and stars and all the things, and the moon and sun and all that. And actually, that's like not a bad metaphor. Layers and layers of this cool, impossibly smooth fabric that has depth in it, and it glides effortlessly. That's the sense I get when I look at the night sky. Daytime stuff in the sky happens in our own atmosphere, so it feels close. It feels like it's right over there, but nighttime stuff is almost dizzying in how distant it feels. Even in these ancient views of cosmology, where we didn't have the full picture of the size of our universe, the distant stars and planets were still really, really, really far away. And there's that sense that what you're observing, even if you're just standing there looking up in the night sky, feels far away. It feels distant. So I don't, yeah, if you had this fabric that you could touch or the surface of the water that you could touch, you could feel its smoothness, you could feel its depth, but it also gives you then this sensation of being very far removed from you. Embedded on that impossibly smooth fabric or impossibly smooth surface are a few surprises. First off, there's the stars. The stars themselves are like little thumbtacks, little needles, small, sharp points. Some are taller than others, but they're all incredibly thin, like the thinnest needle you can imagine. And in one hemisphere, there's about 3,000 stars visible. To the naked eye, you have to get out of the cities, you have to get out of that, a completely dark sky. You'll see about 3,000 of these. So if you had your fabric, you'll be able to feel about 3,000 individual needles embedded in this fabric. And they really do. I'm choosing needle very deliberately because they do feel sharp. Stars feel very thin, very sharp, and stand in incredible contrast to that smooth, deep blackness of space. There's these sharp little points embedded in it. Now, the stars, you can kind of connect the points. Say, just take the tallest ones, which would be the brightest ones. You can make abstract figures like people or animals or cups, bowls of soup. I don't know. These are the constellations. Little abstract features we see just by connecting the brightest points on the sky. There's also the planets. And at first glance, they seem like stars. But if you watch the planets for a while, or if you observe the planets for a while, something different happens to them. One, they don't twinkle. The stars themselves twinkle as the light from the star enters our atmosphere. There's movements of cold air and hot air all jiggling about. And that literally bends the path of the light before it hits our eye. So if you imagine those needle-like points of stars, imagine that they're vibrating. They're shifting. If you were to put your finger on one, it wouldn't hold steady. It'd jiggle up and down, left and right, wobble around. While the planets appear more solid. If you put your finger on a planet, it's, again, another point of light, another needle, it wouldn't twinkle at all. It would stay solid. Also, the planets have a very slight amount of width to them that the stars don't. And you can perceive this even with your eyes. The planets seem different. So instead of being an incredibly thin needle embedded in this fabric, it has a little tiny, tiny little bit of width to it. Instead of a sharp needle point, it's almost like a rounded top to that needle. And there's only a few planets you can see with the naked eye. Most of everything that you could feel on this fabric are the stars. The moon has the texture to me of polished marble. If you take like a marble sphere and you're able to run your hands over it, that's just what the moon feels like to me. It doesn't feel like that at all in real life. Not that I know, but you know, I've seen pictures. We know what the astronauts have done on the moon. It doesn't have that texture, but hanging there in the night sky, embedded in this fabric of the night sky, it feels like it's a piece of polished marble. There are different features of it, lighter and darker features, but the texture between the different regions of the moon doesn't change. So it's almost like you took two different kinds of marble and smashed them and glued them together and then sanded it down, or whatever you do to marble to make it smooth. You made the marble smooth. So there are differences, but you can't really feel them. They have the same texture. And of course, depending on the relative position of the sun and the moon, we can have the full moon where you get to feel the entire disk, a circular disk of the moon. Or sometimes if the sun is only illuminating one part, it's like a thin curved knife edge a knife, a sliver of marble hanging there in the fabric of the night sky, almost as sharp as the stars are, but not quite. And over the course of the month, the moon will swing back and forth between being the full disk and this sliver. Also, sometimes in the sky, you'll see some satellites. Satellites, they look like stars. They're just little weensy, teensy points of light, little needles of light, but they move, and they move very fast. And the weird, it's almost disconcerting to me to watch a satellite because of how precisely it moves. When we think of movement in a car or airplane, we think of bumps in the road, turbulence, turning left, turning right, going up a hill, going down a hill. We sense movement even when we walk. You know, we bounce up and down a little bit when we walk. When satellites move, it's too precise. And again, this Greek concept of layers, nested layers of crystal spheres. And the spheres are simply gliding, moving effortlessly within each other and carrying with them the astronomical objects. That's a great metaphor. So if you're feeling this field of needles, of thin little needles embedded in this incredibly smooth fabric, every once in a while you'll encounter a needle that's moving, and it's moving in a perfectly straight line. It's not wiggling left, it's not wiggling right, it's just going straight at a constant speed. And it's kind of weird to feel, to track that thing across the sky. There's also the zodiacal light. This is light that is reflecting off all the dust and junk in our atmosphere. It's very difficult to see unless you get outside the cities. This is like a faint cone of texture emanating from one edge. So you have space, which is this very, very smooth, deep fabric. You have the pinpoint of stars. You have a marble moon. But on one side, kind of one edge of the bowl that you're feeling, it's a little bit rougher. There's a little tiny cone of texture. It's wider at the base and kind of tapers up to a point. That is the zodiacal light. Also, in the night sky, you'll see the Milky Way. Milky Way is the disk of our own galaxy. Hundreds of billions of stars, but those stars are so far away that we can't see the individual points of light in the star. We just see the combined light. So it does have, the Milky Way is very appropriately named. It does have a very creamy feel to it. Seriously, go spill some milk. Try not to cry. Again, if you want better jokes, patreon.com/bmsutter. Go spill some milk. Try not to cry. And you'll feel that. It's has this spilled milk texture across the sky. It does stand in contrast to the other stars. The stars in the blackness of space are like opposite ends of a spectrum. Like the smoothest thing you can feel would be space, and then the sharpest, thinnest thing you could feel would be the stars. That Milky Way, it has some interesting texture to it. You can run your hands through it. It feels like you can run your fingers through it. And you could almost reach out and push it around. Like you'd take spilled milk and you can scoop it around. You can nudge it here and there. It almost feels like you can do that with the Milky Way. And every once in a while, if you're in a very dark spot, you can see some nebula. Nebula are very silky. Layers of silk fabric, wisps, like they're barely there. Like if you don't pay attention to them, you can slip right over them. You just might mistake them for the incredible smoothness of empty black space. But if you're paying attention, you can pick them out. You can feel that very slight texture of the nebula. And all of this is accessible with the naked eye. So if you get out of a city, these are the things you see in the night sky, and these are the kind of textures that I personally associate with them. Now, when you break out a telescope, the game changes. When you break out a telescope, it's a whole new world. Sky. It's a whole new sky. Telescopes do two things. They amplify and they magnify. So with a telescope, thin things become thick things. And small differences become big differences. So if you're looking at something very, very tiny, that thing will become larger. And if you have a small difference in texture, it's going to become a big difference in texture. And so many things on the night sky completely change character once you look at them through a telescope. They look radically different and they feel radically different. For the moon, when you look at it with the unaided eye, it has this kind of smooth, polished marble texture to it. You look at it through a telescope, it's like you're looking at paper mache. It looks rough and crumbly, like a crumb topping on a cake or a donut. I might be a little bit hungry right now. Paper mache. Let's stick to paper mache so I don't get even hungrier. It's very rough. It's very kind of powdery, crummy, very, very strange texture with the moon. And you see that there are craters. It's not just one smooth surface. It's a pitted surface. It's a broken surface. There are cracks and crags and craters and crevasses all over the moon. When you look at the planets, they go from being little dots of light. So instead of just being little rounded needle points, you look at them through a telescope and they're like cardboard cutouts. They almost don't seem real. That is the number one reaction I get when I'm with people and they look at the planets for the first time, they think like that I just drew on the eyepiece like a little picture of Saturn or something. It doesn't look real. It feels like, and it really does feel like this to me, like a cardboard cutout. Or like if you took a piece of cardboard paper and you cut out a hole in it, it feels like the planet is a hole in that impossibly deep and dark space. In that impossibly smooth fabric, if you like cut out a piece of it, that's what seeing a planet through a telescope looks like. One of the most surprising things is empty space itself. What you thought, what felt like impossibly smooth, turns out to be filled with an infinite set of points. More stars, the stars you can't see with the unaided eye. Very, very small needles. So you feel it once and there's nothing there. But then you amplify and magnify a little patch with a telescope and you see there's 1,000 spots. There's 1,000 needles that were too small for you to feel with just your fingers. And you can pick a little piece of that, a smaller corner of that, and zoom in and 1,000 more needles, even smaller. Take a small gap between there that feels impossibly smooth. Zoom in there, 1,000 more. It doesn't stop. It's like there's an infinite set of points of needles where when you just look with your unaided eye or you just feel with your unaided hand, it's just, you only feel the brightest. You only feel the tallest needles. There's thousands upon millions of incredibly tiny needles embedded in this fabric that you thought, they were so small, you thought the fabric was perfectly smooth. The Milky Way, that texture disappears. That creamy, milky texture is gone. And it too is replaced with not 1,000 points of light, but tens of thousands of needles. So it's almost weird to think about this thing that you felt that felt so smooth and silky and creamy. When you zoom in on it, you actually see it's an uncountably high number of very tiny needles all packed closely together. And that combined, it was only when you felt it with your entire finger, you know, unaided, combined, it felt very creamy and milky. But up close, looking at the Milky Way through a telescope is like feeling the individual molecules of a liquid. Imagine if you run your hand over the surface of water, it feels smooth, feels watery. And imagine you're able to amplify a piece of it so much that you can run your hands over it and you could feel the water molecules vibrating against your skin. That's what it's like to look in the Milky Way through a telescope. Completely changes character. The nebula themselves become grander and more complex. Instead of just being a thin, faint, barely there wisp of silky fabric, it's many layers of fabric, almost like it's a frozen moment that they're billowing in the wind, that there's a sense of movement and dynamism there, but they get frozen. And you're just seeing one frozen moment of these fabrics, these curtains of silk wrapping around each other. And you could trace their outlines. You can almost sense their three-dimensional structure. The telescope was revolutionary scientifically, and it's a revolution of insight to look at the night sky through a telescope. What the unaided eye sees is enormously different than what a telescope allows us to see. And the textures, the sensations, the feelings that you might get from imagining a night sky are totally different to the textures, the sensations, the feelings you get from doing astronomy. To me, looking at the night sky is strange. It's very hard for me to come up with a different word to describe it. This is why, one of the reasons I went in to astronomy, astrophysics, all this sciencey stuff, is when I look at the night sky, I get this incredibly strange feeling. It's an almost overwhelming sense of depth and vastness. It's incredibly frustrating too, because it seems, I'm so used to the daytime sky being like right there. It's just right there. We can send airplanes through it. It's right there. But the night sky is there. It occupies the same space. It's still the dome of the sky, the upside down bowl that we live under, but it's not. It seems like it should be right there, but it's not. It feels right here and way out there at the same time. And I don't know how to describe that with texture. A fabric that you can touch that you can't really touch, where you can only get the sense of it. Like you can only hover your hand over it. You don't ever actually get to reach out and grab it. And like I said, it's cool. It's not quite cold. It's not quite cold. It's cool. And there's a sense of beauty there and almost like hidden meaning. Like you feel like, I feel like when I'm looking at the night sky, when I sit there and I look at the night sky and it's a beautiful night, I feel like I'm on the edge of asking a profound question. Like the sky has all the answers already, but it won't tell me until I form the correct question. So I just stare up there and wonder. That's the sense I get from the night sky, is wonderment. It makes me think. And I'm sure, even if you can't see the night sky, I'm sure that there are opportunities you have in your life that make you reflect, that make you think, that make you wonder, that give you sensations that are hard to put into words, where you have a sense of depth and beauty and strangeness. Those are the kinds of feelings that I get personally, just me, Paul Sutter, get when I look at the night sky. Before I go, I should mention that there are some professional astronomers that are blind. When we do professional astronomy, professional astrophysics, it's all about math. We use the visual stuff, we make images, we make plots and graphs to aid our understanding, but at the end of the day, it's all math, it's all data. And you can manipulate data, you can manipulate math, you can do math, you can work with data without having to see it. You can still understand it. That being blind is not a barrier to doing science in general, and it's not a barrier to doing astronomy. But there is still that thing, like you have a mountain of data, and you want to understand it, you want to interpret it. So if you can't make a picture, you can't make an image, you can't make a plot, you can use sound. There's an increasing use of what's called sonification, turning data into sound to interpret and understand the results that we're getting. This is a very exciting movement. I'll put a link in my show notes. And thank you very much for listening, especially if you're listening to this episode for the first time or this series for the first time. Check out my other episodes because they're all really fun. They're less about this and more about stars blowing up and that wormholes don't exist. But, you know, they're still really fun. I'd like to thank you all for listening. Thank you so much for helping to support the show on patreon.com/pmsutter. I really can't thank all of you enough. But I can thank Helgi B., Justin G., Justin R., Jerry, and Kevin O., for being especially generous in their contributions. If you'd like to contribute $1, 50 cents, 25 bucks, $1,000, doesn't matter the amount, just throwing out some options there, you can go to patreon.com/pmsutter. If you don't want to contribute money, or, you know, times are tight, and Christmas is around the corner or something. I have no idea when this episode will air. Let's pretend Christmas is right around the corner. You can still help the show, and I would greatly appreciate it. Tell everyone you know about it. Tell them about askaspaceman.com. Leave reviews on iTunes. iTunes reviews are super duper useful. They're incredibly easy to do. You can just make a sub. I'll even type it. Send me an email. I will type your review for you. That might be unethical, but we'll do it, all right, because we're friends. And then you can post it under your name, and that will be great. I'd like to thank Tom for asking the very thought-provoking question for today's episode. Please visit askaspaceman.com, or not, you don't have to. You can also follow me, or not, you don't have to. I'm at Paul Matt Sutter on Twitter or Facebook. And visit the YouTube channel, or not, you don't have to, youtube.com/c/PaulMattSutter. And I will see you next time for more Complete Knowledge of Time and Space.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.